Gateau had shown them a handwritten list of the events that they'd be seeing.
The Baron'll be happy if you go in for some of them. More the better.
They all gathered around, Christy reading it out loud to the others.
It starts with some wrestling on the lawn out back. Then we go to the butts for archery, followed by rifle shooting and knife-fighting demonstration with muffled blades.
They tie rags around them and smear paint on, so you can see when a hit's made.
Pistol shooting is last.
She glanced at Mildred.
Oh no, there's something at the end, just called a special final. What's that, Gateau?
Sort of a grudge fight, Christy. Last thing of the afternoon is when the Baron Mandeville and Mistress Marie get to give out the rewards.
Prizes?
You could say that.
Gateau looked at the big pendulum clock at the end of the passage.
Let's go, Outlanders. How many of you are going to compete?
Ryan had managed to talk to the others during lunch, agreeing they might as well put up the best show they could, as long as it didn't involve any serious risk to any of them. From the list, nothing looked too hazardous.
Michael for the close combat, JB in the long blaster shooting, me with the knives, and Mildred with the pistol.
Harry Gateau looked curiously at Mildred.
I heard you thought you was good. You know, you'll shoot against me. Well, a couple of others as well. But they couldn't hit themselves even with the barrels up their asses.
You want a side bet, Sergeant?
Wouldn't take your jack, lady.
Mildred stepped in closer, pushing her face at the grizzled veteran.
Wouldn't be that you're frightened of losing to a woman, would it?
He took a half step away, holding his hands up, palms out.
Hey, take it easy. It's nothing personal. Back off.
We don't really need a side bet, do we, Gateau? We both know what we're shooting for.
He looked like he was going to say something. Then Gateau thought better of it and turned away.
Dangerous bastard. I know most sick men don't have the brains of an outhouse shovel. Gateau's good. Anyway, let's go take part in the games. Michael, you're going to be on first. Do your best, but try not to chill anyone.
It was intended as a joke, but Michael didn't even crack a smile.
Each fight will be ended by a submission, a knockout, or a fall. Both shoulders pinned to the grass for a count of three.
The sex sergeant looked up at Mandeville.
Are you ready, Baron?
I think so. Will young Michael be prepared to take on the winner? Or should I ask Gateau to pick out a boy from the kitchens to tumble with?
I'll take the winner, no trouble.
Good. Then let us proceed.
The lawn lay out at the back of the ville, defended by a high stone wall, the river flowing just beyond it. Considering the general dryness of that part of Kansas in the summer, the grass was amazingly green and lush. Gateau explained why this was so.
Watered and rolled every day for the last 15 years. Hand-weeded. You could have grass like that if you took the trouble, Carter.
He drew closer.
By the way, whatever happened to the traitor? Heard so many rumors. He really go up to God in a golden war wag?
I heard rumors, too. Far as I know, traitor's dead. But gone a couple of years now. You know different?
The sec man shook his head.
Nothing I can prove, Carter. A lot of cheap talk, nothing else.
Baron Mandeville was seated on what was close to being a throne, set on a dais above everyone else. He was wearing a loose jerkin of soft green wool, fringed with sable. The rich fur was so dark it had a coppery sheen to it, reminding Ryan of the wings of blowflies. Next to the Baron, in an identical seat, was his daughter. Marie was leaning back in her chair, tapping her fingers on the arm. She wore a short dress of white fringed leather, with a wide belt of brilliant red. There were rings on all of her fingers, some of them unlike anything Ryan had ever seen. One was a silver skull with an opal set in the forehead. Another held an unnervingly accurate glass replica of a human eye. Ryan hoped it was only a replica. Her ankle-length boots matched the belt and had tapering, slender heels. The Baron waved a hand to them.
We can begin now! Find yourselves somewhere to sit!
He gestured to a row of chairs ranged on both sides of him. Ryan noticed that the preening fops were conspicuously absent from the gathering, though three sides of the lawn were lined with male and female servants from the ville. Marie beckoned to Ryan.
Sit by me, Outlander.
Ryan sat where she pointed, with Christy beside him. The others all found seats to watch the wrestling. It was almost immediately obvious which of the wrestlers Michael was going to have to face. Gateau had positioned himself directly behind Ryan and Marie Mandeville, giving him a whispered commentary on the fighters. One was a butcher, heavily muscled, but slow and clumsy. Another worked in the forest, slimmer, but visibly worried about getting himself hurt.
Jericho will take them, one hand behind his back, won't he, Mistress Marie?
Marie didn't turn to face the sex sergeant, contenting herself with a nod. Jericho appeared in the third of the opening bouts. Unlike the others, he fought stripped to the waist, and Ryan noticed that he was greased across the shoulders, chest, and arms, making it harder for any of his opponents to hold him. Ryan wondered whether Michael had spotted the trick. Jericho the jailer was well over 6.5 feet, looking to be around 320 pounds. He was very strongly built, despite the suggestion of a beer gut hanging over his maroon trousers. He won both his bouts with absurd ease, his opponents unable to conceal their justified fear of him. Christy leaned toward Ryan.
Not just big and powerful, lover.
No, also fucking mean.
Well, Michael...
We'll see.
Ryan knew that Marie and Gateau were both listening to them. The second of Jericho's opponents was being helped away, bleeding from nose and mouth. The first had only just recovered consciousness after a bone-numbing knee drop, performed with grinning ease by the jailer.
Will your boy fight this giant of mine, Ryan Cawdor?
Ask him yourself.
Michael stood and peeled off his black denim shirt, taking several deep breaths. Ryan watched the crowd, seeing from their muttering that they felt the slender teenager had no hope at all. There was a 10-inch difference in height and nearly 200 pounds in weight. Jericho was stomping around in steel-tipped boots, his hands clasped above his head, trying to psych the boy out. But Michael ignored him. He looked down above the tips of the trees, his dark eyes half-closed. His black hair, which betrayed his crow ancestry, gleamed in the afternoon sunlight.
No contest!
Wrong, father.
What? You think that stripling boy has a chance, Marie? Seriously?
A wager, father?
What?
If the Outlander wins, then he dines with me in my rooms tonight.
And if he loses...
Marie waved a slender hand dismissively.
Then let him dine alone with Jericho.
On with it, or the day will be gone. Both ready?
Jericho saluted his master, and Michael dropped into a fighting crouch.
One moment.
Mandeville looked at Ryan.
What is it?
If my friend damages your man...
The fool deserves to be damaged, Outlander. But I wouldn't worry about it. Worry for the skinny boy once Jericho lays hands on him.
But Jericho never really laid hands on Michael at all. He moved in with all of the leering confidence of the successful bully, his fingers crooked, intending to pull the younger, lighter, shorter man into his grasp, and then rend and utterly destroy him. During his lifetime at the reclusive monastery of Nilvanity, Michael had become an advanced master of the esoteric oriental martial art of Dao Ten Do, a skill that had turned him into the fastest fighting machine that Ryan or JB had ever seen. He moved in a blur of action, feinting to duck away from Jericho, then closing with him and dropping beneath the gripping hands. The watchers gasped as the slightly built youth appeared behind the blundering jailer, snatching at his left arm and wrenching it behind the man's sweating, oiled back, bringing him to his knees.
Do you submit?
No! No! Ah! Fuck you! Ah, yeah! Yeah! I give in! You're breaking my fucking wrist!
Michael stepped away, turning toward Ryan and the others, unable to conceal a small smile of triumph. Marie Mandeville tapped her father on his arm.
I win.
I suppose.
But while Michael's back was turned, Jericho lunged at him, driving up from his beaten position on his knees, smashing a huge fist into Michael's ribs. Ryan jumped to his feet, the Sig Sauer drawn and cocked. But Gateau was faster, almost as if he second-guessed Jericho and anticipated Ryan's reaction. He had his own blaster out, the barrel pressed into the one-eyed man's spine.
Sit down.
In the brief time that the exchange took, the fight had moved on. The cowardly punch sent Michael staggering to his right, away from the furious jailer. The boy's face had gone sheet white, except for a spot of crimson on each cheekbone. He rubbed the spot where the blow had landed, turning to confront his opponent.
Stop this, Baron!
Frick, little shitty!
You gave in!
Sure,
just to make sure you let go my arm. No submission this time, Outlander.
No. No submission this time.
Michael started to skip lightly on his toes from side to side, jigging back and forth. Someone in the crowd laughed, and Jericho frowned.
Stand still and take it, you brown-holing little bastard!
Ryan was watching intently, but it was so lightning swift that he missed it. The young man darted in, seeming to flick contemptuously at the jailer's face.
Sweet Jesus!
Jericho sunk slowly to his knees, both hands gripping his throat. His mouth gaped open, and he seemed to be battling to draw breath.
Smashed his voice box.
It was like seeing a freeze frame on a flickering old vid. The giant figure of Jericho, blood trickling from his mouth, looked helplessly up at his slim young destroyer.
Submit now. Can't hear you, Jericho.
Put your blaster away, Gato. It's not needed.
I can see that, Carter. The boy's gonna chill him, ain't he?
I reckon he is. He deserves to be chilled after the crap he pulled.
I don't hear you saying anything, Jericho!
Do it, boy. Do it.
Marie stood up, her hands gripping the arms of her carved oak chair, her knuckles white as chiseled ivory. Tiring of his revenge, the teenager swiveled, putting all his weight on his left leg.
It's over.
Marie Mandeville was breathing hard, one hand now pressed against her breasts.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The kneeling man fell backward, vivid blood gushing from his mouth. The blow had pulped his nose, driving splinters of bone into the brain. He now lay still, just one leg kicking for a few seconds in a post-mortem neural spasm. Standing close to Marie, Ryan was aware of the tension in her body, her thighs squeezed together in a paroxysm of excitement. Suddenly she relaxed with a great sigh, opening her eyes and smiling at Ryan.
I shall enjoy dining with that fast boy, Outlander.
Ryan simply nodded, moving away to congratulate Michael on his victory. Mandeville was on his feet, struggling to readjust the beaming, good-natured mask.
Well, a surprise there, friends. But more of a surprise for Jericho, I believe. Now let's go to the butts for the shooting.
The shooting range was actually outside the fortified walls of Suncrest. It lay a quarter mile to the east, across the wooden bridge over the narrow river, and through a copse of elegant silver birches to an open area that had been painstakingly cleared from raw forest. The rifle butts ran for a full half mile, ending in a high bank of sandy earth. A number of round, colorful, straw-padded archery targets stood ready.
I can hardly believe that this is Kansas. Bloody Kansas. Granary of the world. Wheat from sunrise to sunset.
More like northern Montana or Washington State. Endless forests.
Gato had deliberately fallen in to walk with Ryan. It was noticeable that the sect presence was much greater once they were outside the ville, all carrying their standard armalites, and all of them were alert.
Never seen the like of that breed kid of yours.
He's not a breed. I think he had a Crow grandfather. Wouldn't think about calling him a breed, Gato.
Where'd he learn to fight like that?
Ryan wasn't about to get himself tangled up in the complex realities of time trawling.
I don't know.
Jericho never had a chance. Like a spitball up against a gren launcher.
The man shouldn't have tried to blindside the boy.
You can sure as shit say that again, Carter.
They were near a row of seats set out along a raised dais at one end of the butts.
Archery first?
Yeah. You Outlanders don't have anyone who can put six from six in the gold, have you?
Both JB and Ryan were a lot better than adequate with either longbow or crossbow, but it seemed a good idea not to lay every card down on the table.
Gato!
Coming, Baron! Letting that ball of fire kid chill Jericho might turn out to be one of the worst moves you ever made in your life, Carter.
Christy caught the last words, registering the venom that lay beneath them.
What was that about, lover?
Gato shooting his mouth about how Michael could have made a bad move for us.
He didn't have to chill the jailer.
Maybe, but I'd have done it in his place.
The only surprise in the archery came when one of the young bedroom servants beat a bearded sec man in the shoot-off, scoring 2 golds, 3 inners, and an outer with her last 6 shafts. The man stalked angrily off, the mocking shouts of his fellows and the watching crowd ringing in his ears. Twice Ryan had glanced along the row of seats to where Marie Mandeville had insisted on Michael Brother being next to her. For the first time since they'd encountered the woman, she was showing animation, talking in a low, urgent voice to the teenager, constantly laying her hand on his arm, or on his thigh. Baron Mandeville ignored his daughter, but Harry Guiteau was also keeping an eye on what was happening. J.B. took the Steyr rifle from Ryan, who hung on to the Uzi while the armorer competed in the long gun target shooting. His eyes glinted behind his glasses.
Like taking candy from a baby.
When it came to anything linked to weapons, the armorer wasn't often wrong. It was like taking candy from a baby. The 3 Sec men who reached the last round to go against J.B. were the best of the mediocre bunch. All of them handled the targets at 50 and 100 paces without any trouble, slamming bullet after bullet from their immaculate armalites into, or very near, the bull.
Would you care to participate, Outlander?
I'll wait until it gets harder, thanks, Baron. I could spit at the target at this range.
The Father Christmas smile disappeared, like September frost off a meadow. Once the range went up to 250 yards, the cracks started to appear. At the announcement of the progression to 500 paces, J.B. stood and slowly made his way to lie down alongside the maroon-uniformed Sec-men, wrapping the sling on the rifle around his forearm for extra stability. Guiteau nudged Ryan.
You got some of the best blasters I ever saw, Carter. That a legacy from your days with the Traitor?
Some are, some aren't. It's been a while since Traitor took his last walk, you know, Guiteau.
Sure. What was it the Indians called him? Oh yeah, the man who walks without friends. You and Dix think of him like that, Carter?
That was a name given Traitor by those who weren't his friends. He had some good friends, but he didn't have many enemies.
Not many enemies?
A disbelieving grin split the grizzled sex sergeant's face. None who are still alive. J.B. never allowed the shooting to be anything approaching a contest. The Steyr SSG-70, firing the uncommon 7.62mm full metal jacket round, had the powerful Starlight night scope and a brutally efficient laser image enhancer. Working the bolt action with fluid ease, the skinny armorer pumped all 10 rounds into a group less than a handspan across, each hit being greeted by a wave of the green flag by the servants, acting as markers at the far end of the butts. None of the Sec-men got more than half their shots on the target. They all stood, but J.B. lay still, looking up at them.
What's happening?
You won, Outlander. Beat us out of sight.
We not going on to the half mile?
No fucking point, is there?
Let's hear it for John Dix, winner of the long gun shooting.
None of the workers from the bill wanted to seem too enthusiastic in supporting the victory of any Outlander. Not with the Baron watching them so closely. Marie Mandeville hardly seemed to be noticing what was happening. Nor did Michael, whose left hand was clasped firmly in Marie's long-nailed fingers.